What a difference a year makes. On September 19th, 2011, I was returning from officiating a wonderful wedding for a dear friend and former student of mine at a magnificent vineyard in Santa Ynez County in Central California. Kirsten and I were sideways with joy and had so much fun there that I even joined my first wine club. Kirsten has been forbidding me from joining future wine clubs ever since, and wisely so. I was anticipating at that time a week filled with meetings and appointments with individuals, with groups. I would be co-leading a retreat, one of the days for caregivers in my faith community, the community that I had been called to serve. That Sunday, I would be leading that community in worship and hopefully sharing something that could be encouraging, challenging, and hopefully inspiring for their journeys of faith. I was living out the vocation to which I had been called and for which I had been prepared for 20 years. On September 19th, 2012, I awoke before the crack of dawn to drive a school bus around town, picking up students with special gifts and needs, dropping them off at their daily learning communities. I would do the same in the afternoon, adding a few more students in a couple more schools. In between, I watered the yard. I helped with cleaning the house somewhat. I went running. I checked my email for any new updates about possible new jobs. I contacted people who may have had leads or connections to said possible new jobs, and I wrote things occasionally in my blog, like these thoughts. I was now living in a place and space emotionally, relationally, vocationally, and spiritually that I never imagined I would be. And I was not alone. My family was making this journey with me, traveling through their own confusion and challenges brought on by my sudden and unexpected loss of job. I was also one of roughly 12,500,000 unemployed people in the U.S. at that time, about 8.1% of the population. And that figure didn't include the other community that I had more recently become a part of, the underemployed, 8.3% of the population at that time. I considered myself very fortunate to be a part of the latter group and not the former, but it was certainly not where I expected to find myself at that juncture of my life's journey. What a difference a year makes, indeed. The voices that played in my head were numerous and varied. Some of them came from around me, resounding with a heartfelt encouragement and confidence, reminding me that I was gifted and talented enough that I shouldn't have any trouble finding a new place to share those gifts and talents, and even that any of those potential new places would be, quote, crazy not to hire me. Then 9 months after losing my job, I still found myself scanning the horizon for one of those places, any of those places. Those places that now appeared to be more crazy than my friends had realized. Other voices cried out from within me in frustration and rage at the injustice my family and I had to endure, lashing out at the silent one, capital O, who called us to this place, only to be rejected by the community that called us in the name of that one, capital O, and leaving me to wonder why I had spent all of my adult life seeking to follow that one, capital O, in this seemingly blessed and definitely baffling calling, if all it did was lead me to this absurd and agonizing place. And all of those words about how poignant and powerful that silence is continued to haunt me for how hollow they all sounded now. and reminded me of how sorry I was for all the times I inflicted those words on dear, struggling people over so many years. Still other voices emerged from my past, that most primal place within me, and turned that frustration and rage inward. And I ended up berating myself for taking my calling and my job for granted, beating myself up for not doing a better job, burdening myself with increasing shame and guilt for letting down my family and my community and myself. And this led me either back down memory lane to when all of life was, quote, magnificent and made sense, or to dream forward into a future where somehow all would be made well again, which were both simply means of me to deny the present reality in which I lived and moved and breathed, and yet had an increasingly difficult time being. It was quite a psychotic symphony in my subconscious in those days. And most of the time, that cacophony in my cerebral cortex drowned out the one voice that I actually needed and wanted to hear the most, the voice that communicates to me who I really am and whose I really am, the voice that counters all the berating and beating up and burdening with the reminders of blessing and my belovedness, the voice that is encountered most often in silence and transcends that silence with peaceful, loving, and life-giving presence, the voice that embraces all past and present and future into one eternal now. I arrived to the bus station on that chilly autumn morning in shorts, a University of Montana sweatshirt, and an old pair of running shoes, in silence. I did my first pre-trip inspection of the bus, in silence. I greeted my partner and helper, closed the door, clicked on the seatbelt, released the emergency brake, put the bus in gear, pulled out of the parking lot, and drove to pick up my first student, in silence. I arrived at the first stop a couple of minutes early, surprisingly, and waited in silence until my first student arrived, a sweet young lady layered against that morning chill, a bulky leather jacket and jeans, the Philadelphia Phillies cap on her head, and I broke the silence. I extended my hand to her in greeting, which she vigorously shook in reply. "Hi, I'm Brian, and I'll be driving you now." And she broke the silence with just one word. It's an ordinary word in our culture, but one for me on that morning that might as well have come from the burning bush, or the bow tree, or the cave of Hira, or the mount of Mecca, or Sinai, or Calvary. With a smile, she replied, "Awesome." As a bus driver, you learn to be diligent in keeping all obstructions out of your sight lines. And so I quickly wiped away the tears that were welling up in my eyes and blurring my vision. And I found that the tears that had blurred my vision had actually washed away some of the frustration and fear, the sorrow and shame, the confusion and cacophony, and had given me a new kind of vision. A vision of hope drowning out despair. A vision of peace overpowering discord. A vision of love empowering service and life. A vision of one community released to exist in the past. And another, smaller, quieter, and equally special community emerging right before my eyes in the present moment, riding along bus 132 through the streets of Missoula, Montana, embodying in their own very unique ways the presence of the presence, capital P. a vision of embracing that new little community as the ones I was called to serve in that present moment, as my present experience of the latest incarnation of the eternal now. It wasn't mud and spit in my eyes that restored my sight. It was just the exclamation of a teenager, a child of our Creator, an unknowing mouthpiece for the silent voice. Or as I wrote later, it was what came through my ears that enacted the tears that flowed like the river ever flowing, washing away our failures and fears, empowering us through faltering moments unknowing to move forward, embracing all that comes our way, drawing us ever closer to the ocean of love, capital O, capital L, that embraces all past, present, and future today, inviting us to simply, sincerely, and silently embrace now. Often in the trials and tribulations of our lives, hearing that God is eternal, that Jesus is the Alpha and Omega, the beginning and end, past, present, and future, simultaneously wrapped up in one person, can mean as much to us as knowing that E equals MC squared, or that in 1492, Columbus sailed the ocean blue. It's not seemingly helpful or meaningful when all our lungs can do is sigh, and all our eyes can do is cry, and all our ears can hear is perpetual pounding noise. But sometimes, in the midst of the sigh, something truly astonishing appears or happens that takes our breath away. And then it gives us our breath back anew. Sometimes in the midst of that cry, someone comes along to absorb our tears and embrace our fears in pure acceptance and welcome and understanding, and gives us hope that's renewed. Sometimes in the midst of the noise, somehow a sound like sheer silence drowns out the roaring and raging clamor and gives us a peace that's true. Or as the cover of your bulletin says, sometimes we realize that there's more going on than meets the eye, greater mystery and complexity beneath the surface and beyond our perception. The I am is an embodiment of that eternal presence. You are a reflection of it and connected within it. And you are here. Eternity is now. Because the I am lives, we also live. Because the I am loves, we also love. Because the I am is love, we also are love. Because the I am is the eternal now, we are a part of that eternal now. And we truly are here now. This moment is sacred and everlasting. We aren't trapped. We are actually transcendent. We aren't frozen in fear. We are free in love. To experience it, to receive it, to share it. To share it even with those who wound others. Even with those who spread hatred instead of healing. Even those who seek to bring judgment and condemnation upon all others besides themselves, instead of bringing justice and compassion for all. The table that we come to in communion is an invitation to experience that eternal now, to celebrate that we are all a part of it, that we are all welcome, just as we are, right where we are, in this present moment and each present moment to come. To remember and be reminded that we are connected together as one. Capital O. So come as you are, and come as you are able. Taste and see that the I Am is good. Know that you are loved. Know that you are love. And know that you are not alone. That we are all in whatever this is together. Amen.